This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Carlson Fish Oils. Fish oil provides the vital omega-3s, EPA and DHA, which support cardiovascular, brain and nerve, vision, immune system, joint, and skin health. Carlson ensures maximum freshness by managing their fish oils from sea to shelf. All Carlson fish oils are tested by an FDA-registered laboratory for freshness, potency, and purity, and they're available in soft gels and liquid form. For more information, go to carlsonlabs.com. Carlson fish oils are available at fine health food stores nationwide. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and it is time for our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. With me today, Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mutin. She has earned the right to field questions because she laboriously completed dual credentialing with a registered dietitian credential, but then she went beyond that to achieve a master's degree in the field of nutrition. And we've been working together for, what is it, Layla, over 10 years now?
Oh, since October 2005.
Okay, well, wow. We're talking 12 years. Wow, time flies when you're
having
fun.
Yeah, we're getting into 12 years.
Yeah, wow. Okay, so we're
time
like...
Time flies when you're having fun.
We're completing each other's sentences, so that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
All right, so good. So, and to get questions to us, you can email your questions to radioprogram@AOL.com, and we got a big mailbox full of questions that we're going to endeavor to answer. Briefly, I'll comment on one of the news stories that I posted on Facebook. I thought it was pretty interesting. Headline, does a Mediterranean diet affect ADHD? And of course, you know, the official position is that diet doesn't matter in terms of attention deficit disorder. But as far back as
I can't believe people still say that.
Yeah,
can't believe it.
Well, it's
diet
just,
doesn't matter.
It's just a question of Ritalin, Adderall, you Concerta. You know, these are the ways to deal with it. But of course, diet does matter. And you know, I'm not saying that diet is always a panacea for the most egregious behavioral problems. You know, there's a lot of reasons why our kids are having problems. Some of them are social reasons. You know, issues of family cohesion. You know, the right role models and, you know, electronic gadgets that constantly distract them and reduce their attention span. But there's
rewiring their brains, literally.
But there's also, you know, a major nutritional component. And so in this study, they looked at, and I actually think it's kind of a modest proposition. They weren't, you know, they didn't give them a lot of supplements. They just put them on what was called a Mediterranean diet. Which, you know, I kind of was prescient, and I years ago formulated the salad and salmon diet, which is essentially a Mediterranean diet. It's not quite as draconian as a paleo diet that eschews all grains and is much lower carb. But the Mediterranean diet has a lot of healthy fruits and vegetables, spices, some fish, some red wine, but presumably not for the kids, because that wouldn't be good for attention deficit.
Unless you're in France.
Right, that's true. You know, I just flashback.
I remember
used to,
the story. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I used to work as an au pair in France, and that means I was in childcare for a family, like a wealthy family in Paris, and my job was to kind of look after the kids and teach them English part time. And I remember at lunchtime they would sit there and they would give them a little diluted wine. It's just almost to like get them a little used to it. That's not a big deal. It's not a forbidden fruit. But anyway, so coming back to the Mediterranean diet, lots of olive oil, you know, which is beneficial, lots of polyphenols from spices, fresh fruits and vegetables. Of course, the olive oil is rich in polyphenols. And then there's the omega-3 from fish.
And the other healthy fats, nuts and seeds and avocado and,
So what they found is that there was a benefit, you know. There was a benefit to a Mediterranean diet. So, you know, clearly diet does matter. And I think, you know, another aspect of that is getting rid of the preservatives, the sugary, really caffeinated kinds of things, ingredients. But Feingold also suggested you get away from salicylates and other food additives. Salicylates are actually found naturally in foods. So we've prescribed the Feingold diet sometimes for patients with hives. And that's, he originally was, I believe he's a dermatologist who was originally treating patients for hives because they found that certain salicylates, which are, give me an example of a fruit that's high in salicylates, a perfectly healthy fruit. What would that be?
Oh, definitely like the berries.
Okay.
Like raspberries, maybe plums. Let me see here. I'm looking for my salicylate list.
Right.
Oh, let's see here.
So anyway, so these would be...
Very hot. Yeah, apricots, blackberries, blueberries.
Right. So, interestingly, that for some kids, in some studies, have responded to the Feingold diet. And there's a still, I think there still is a Feingold association, although it's so, you know, it's been so long since Feingold has published on this.
That's true.
So anyway, so interesting, yeah.
It's very interesting stuff. And imagine, if you just take a kid off the typical... processed food, convenience food, fast food diet, frozen food diet. When I say frozen food, I'm really talking about like your TV dinners and things of that nature, you know. Or, you know, just plopping the kid down in front of the TV with a snack or something. And the snack is usually not in the form of any kind of fruit or maybe some crudité with a little dip like a guacamole or a hummus or something healthy like that. But it's some kind of grainy item or even a granola bar or something like that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, or even cold cereal,
you know what is a,
which
is
really needs to be called a dessert.
You know what is
anything.
A perfect recipe for attention deficit disorder is a breakfast of Fruit Loops.
Oh.
You know, those like multicolored things, you know, artificially colored little, little cereals. It's no wonder they call it a Fruit Loop. You know, it's like you end up being
It's already in the scientific literature that many children who are sensitive react to those food dyes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's more use of those food dyes here in America than, say, in Europe, for instance, in Great Britain. If they want to color something red.
They did a lot of the studies in Great Britain, so they kind of have more buy-in to that theory. But here we resist the, you know, implementing that in our food supply. So,
Right. Like they will use beta carotene for a red or orange coloring, whereas here we're using, you know, red number 40 or who knows what.
Yeah.
Or
tartrazine. Tartrazine is particularly like rocket fuel for kids' brains. It's a yellow. Tartrazine yellow.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So makes all the difference in the world. But we know this.
Yep.
Yeah.
A lot of these studies, by the way, you know, what I'm commenting on and what I noticed lately is a lot of studies that we put up and discuss on my program and on Facebook, and I put it out on Twitter, are just sort of validations of what we've been saying for a long time,
without
major research studies that now validate some of the things that we've been talking about.
Sure. And, you know, so much of it is, the conclusion is, garbage in, garbage out.
Yep.
That's it. You have to think about the fuel. My favorite analogy is your car. If you put anything less than, you know, quality fuel into your car, you would expect it not to run so well.
Indeed.
We're the same.
We take better care of our cars, for sure.
That's true.
I mean, you know,
that's
some guy, you know, going to, in his fancy new car to a gas station, insisting on paying extra for premium gasoline, and then he'll drive around a corner to a fast food joint and stuff his face with, fried, you know, stuff, you know, artificial
fried
oils.
Who knows what?
Yeah. I mean,
the
latest is now, according to DNA analysis, they found that many of the chicken dishes at fast food eateries are only about half chicken, and the rest are fillers, presumably mostly soy-derived fillers.
They're soy-derived fillers, and there are other things. They're even of the bun of that chicken sandwich. And you know what happens is, and this is how fast food hijacks the brains of children. They get used to this texture of what they know to be chicken, but the texture is quite different when you have other fillers and binders like soy. So when mom makes a roast chicken or dad makes a roast chicken in the oven for Sunday dinner and they taste it, they don't recognize this as chicken.
And they have a jaded palate. They have a jaded palate. And these products that are made for fast food industry are carefully bioengineered to be ultra delectable. They just hit the sweet spot in your brain. You know, the right combination. Yeah, palatable, the right combination of
MSG.
Fat and sweetness and MSG, which is a flavor enhancer. Yeah.
A lot of millions of dollars went into the food science of fast food French fries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The aroma, the mouthfeel, the texture, I mean, all of it. It's really amazing. Yeah.
It's culinary crack.
It's culinary crack. And, you know, that's why people have a hard time stopping eating those kinds of foods once they've gotten into at least a semi-habit.
Mm-hmm.
Of eating those foods, it could be very difficult.
But you can alter your palate. Yeah. I mean, some of it's irrevocable. I think some people are too far gone. But I have to say that now that I'm on a paleo diet, I'm having less in the way of ultra delectable foods. You know, I got rid of all these gluten-free substitutes, put away the toaster, and so I really enjoy the flavor of baked potato with a little bit of ghee and, you know, some sea salt.
Very
on
nice.
It. You know, I'm appreciating tastes more now that I'm not so over-jazzed with ultra-delectable tastes and sweetened chocolate. I'm enjoying the taste of dark chocolate, which is an acquired taste. It's rather bitter, but and you eat less because, you know, it's you don't want to eat as much super concentrated dark chocolate.
Right. It's not a sugar fix anymore, you know. And I remember, you know, even putting people on sugar-free diets or something quite strict like a Candida diet, you know, sugar junkies I'm talking about, and then they go back and they have a bowl of cornflakes and they go, wow, that was just sickeningly sweet.
Right.
And they didn't even put sugar on it, whereas before,
we had a question last week about someone who said they were on a ketogenic diet and then they ate a potato or something. And they felt lightheaded. You know, it's really interesting. I got together with an old friend in the nutrition industry and we had dinner. I actually posted a picture of me having dinner with Jeffrey Bland, who is a luminary in this field. I really enjoyed spending some time with him. Then he was in New York, but it was actually another person whose name I will not divulge, but he's a big guy in the nutrition industry. And I remember this about 20 years ago when, you know, he was much younger and I was much younger. He's a little younger than me, by long shot. And he took us to dinner and, he said, I've just been on a really strict Atkins diet. So, what happened was at the dinner, he said, well, I'm going to have fun tonight. I'm just going to break the diet. And I think he had, he just had like a kind of a carby dinner and he broke out into a sweat and he darn near hit the floor. He passed out because his blood sugar was so blown out. And we laughed because we remember that experience kind of embarrassing for him because here he was so proud that he'd been on the Atkins diet and, you know, great he lost weight and all this stuff. And, you know, and then he
carb loaded, right?
He's a big, strong, you know, he's like 28 years old, and here he was ready to hit the deck, you know. It's kind of embarrassing in front of a nutritionally oriented physician. So
I call that the body remembers insults. He's been on such a nice, clean diet, and his blood sugar has been so well regulated that then you reintroduce this insult to your body, and the body really responds.
Yep.
There you go. Another example of this, of the body, remembering an insult is something like GERD. For example, on going on a very low carb or paleo style diet where all the grains are gone, GERD goes away and it goes away naturally. Yet the first cheat and something specific like bread, the GERD, the reflux, comes roaring back.
Yeah, sometimes that happens.
It's really something.
Yeah. So, anyway, you know, we're doing fine even though we haven't answered a single question here. But let's go proceed to, you know, let's service our audience here. And, you know, I have to say, though, that I haven't gotten a lot of complaints about our digressions. You know, people might, we should be getting a flood of emails from people saying, stick to the subject. Answer, you know, just answer the questions. By the way, a nice thing happened on Facebook this week. We just exceeded 5,000 in terms of our followers on Facebook. And you have really been a major ingredient in that, because I know that you don't...
Well, thanks to you, Dr. Hoffman. You know I don't Facebook.
Yeah. I know you don't Facebook, but when you put up an article there, your articles rock. I mean, you get hundreds and hundreds of viewings on your articles, so you've contributed immensely to the sticky content that brings people in, you know, day after day to kind of catch up on our health news. So if you haven't already done so, just follow us on Facebook. Twitter we also do, but post a little less frequently on Twitter. I use Facebook for social, you know, and again, we digress. And, you know, you can really lose a lot of time. I have many, you know, parrot videos and cat videos and, you know, like, you know, baby pictures and things like that. I mean, after a while, it's like...
Right.
And then the political stuff. Oh, my God. You know, it's like...
Oh, my. I mean,
it's like, if you want to lose, like, half your friends, just post something really, really very, very vicious that's, like, a hit piece politically. And, you know, some people go, yay! Yeah. Other people go, I'm unfriending you. Mm-hmm. So that's advice, you know, in terms of Facebook.
That's been happening to a whole lot of people.
Right.
The unfriending because of
but
the
I
whole
use Facebook
political climate.
To gather news, because I have a lot of, you know, I'm friends with a lot of people who are nutritionally astute, and they post wonderful articles. And sometimes I don't find these articles until I go on Facebook, and I can kind of speed read Facebook. Like, I never skip the cat video, skip the, you know, the, you know, the cute parrot, you know, whatever, the parrot talking, and go right to some of the important news of the day on the nutrition front, or, you know, somebody will post a scientific paper that's fascinating. And, you know, I even look at Facebook sometimes before I read the regular paper, because it aggregates a lot of the important news. Anyway, so follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and let's take a question.
Okay. We've got an email from Julie. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. I'm an active 5'8", 140-pound, 60-year-old woman who recently had a bone density test, and the results say I have osteopenia. My mother has osteoporosis, so I want to do everything I can to prevent it. I'm on a really good diet, lots of green vegetables, fruits, nuts, fish, chicken, some red meat. I've always lifted weights at least 3 times a week. I get in plenty of cardio and walking.
Good.
I'm taking D, I'm taking fish oil, a probiotic, I'm taking magnesium. I also started taking strontium this past spring.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything else I should be taking or not taking?
So,
Dr. Hoffman, she's taking strontium with osteopenia.
Right. So here's the thing. I think strontium, in my opinion, should be reserved for... osteoporosis.
Full-blown osteoporosis. Yeah.
And so osteopenia, by the way, is not a disease. It's sort of a normal physiological state. It's sort of like being, you know, needing reading glasses as you age.
Right.
You're going to lose some bone. So what osteopenia merely means is that there's some loss of bone. And, of course, you have to monitor it because it can progress rapidly to osteoporosis. And, yes, we want to be preventive, but I think we could be preventive with lifestyle and with vitamin D and vitamin K and less strong things than strontium. Strontium is medicinal. It really is. The reason that, you know, strontium is a medication in Europe. And for some loophole reason, it's not considered a medication here. They didn't go for a patent application. They didn't do an FDA submission. And part of the reason, I think, is that the drug industry has so many expensive drugs on the market that they don't want to undercut their own market with another drug.
Sure.
Plus, they have another problem, which is that it's a nutritional supplement. So they would have to lobby the FDA to withdraw strontium from the over-the-counter market so that they could get a monopoly on prescribing it for obviously much more. Instead of, you know, being like, you know, $16 a bottle, it'd be like, you know, $150 a bottle, you know.
Right.
But then you would get your insurance and
money.
Copay and your copay, you know, insurance would pay for it. And then your copay might be, you know, $50 or $30. I don't know. Who knows? You still would pay more because of the way they jack up the prices on, you know, over the price of the raw ingredients, which is really virtually nil to make a profit with pharmaceutical drugs. Okay. So I think strontium, When we use, you know, strontium is present in the natural environment. We get a little bit of strontium in our diets. But when we use strontium for strengthening bone, we're using it at about 1,000-fold the level that we're going to get from an ordinary diet. Now, it works, and it's virtually free of side effects. I think I have a podcast scheduled on the subject of strontium. I'm going to have to check my schedule.
Oh, terrific.
But there are some rumblings of concerns about certain side effects with strontium, and I want to address that with a specific podcast on the subject of strontium, pro and con, you know, all the, you know, what the studies say. You know, some studies say, no, it doesn't work. It makes weak bone. That's not true. It actually really increases bone density and strengthens bone and bottom line, reduces fractures. But we want to kind of, you know, it's like they said on Bunker Hill, don't shoot until you see the whites of their eyes. Keep your powder dry. Mm-hmm. I don't want to wait till people are severely osteoporotic before we do anything about it. But here's the other thing. In conventional medicine, in conventional management of osteoporosis, often women with osteopenia are given these powerful drugs like Actonel, Beneva, and Fosamax for osteopenia. If you look up those drugs... They are not designed. They're not, the indication is for osteoporosis, and they're not designed for osteopenia. There are no studies that show a benefit in osteopenia. So that you're running the risk of side effects for, you know, maybe some benefit, but you're not really, I mean, it's kind of like an unnecessary intervention.
Can we just talk about the disadvantages or the side effects of those bisphosphonate medicines?
Sure, go.
The fact that they slow down the turnover of bone. We're all supposed to have turnover of bone. Our bones are not rocks. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to have turnover. It's a rapid turnover we don't want, which is a hallmark of osteoporosis.
It's remodeling. It's remodeling.
It's bone remodeling.
Right. The analogy that I give is...
Yeah.
The analogy they give is like if you're remodeling your house and all you do is you keep all your old furniture and then you just bring in a lot of new furniture, that's not good. Remodeling means you have to get rid of some of the old and replace with new.
Exactly.
So,
and they're left with brittle bone if they're not getting rid of the old bone. And that can cause, what are those freak fractures that we've been seeing
spiral
sometimes.
Fractures, they're called. You know, atypical spiral fractures where with barely any pressure, I mean, you merely step down off the curb and crack, you know, your femur breaks at some unlikely place. It's not it's unusual. And the longer you use a bisphosphonate, first of all, they should never be used for more than about, you know, 4 to 6 years. After that, there's diminishing returns, and there's a higher risk of fractures. Now, a lot of patients that I've seen, they've been on them for 10, 12 years, which is a huge mistake. So I think that there's a lot of overkill there. By the way, and I'm not totally against medication. There are some patients who I've said, look, you are so far gone, you're not likely to respond well enough to just supplements alone. And you may need medication in conjunction with supplements. And there are medications out there. There's stronger medications than the bisphosphonates. There's Forteo injections, which have a side effect. I mean, they're not allowed to do it for more than 2 years because there's a side effect of bone cancer that's been found in experimental animals, not yet in humans. But they don't let you use it more than 2 years. There's Reclast, which is an intravenous bisphosphonate, but that's going to increase your likelihood of something called Bronge, which is osteonecrosis of the jaw. So bisphosphonate-related
osteoporosis. That's also true of the regular oral bisphosphonates,
too. It is, but to a little to lesser extent.
Regular intake. Yeah, it's regular intake at a dentist's office. Are you taking any bisphosphonate medication?
They don't want to drill your teeth
because they want to check for that,
They especially don't want to do implants. They don't want to do
dental implants
because when you drill into the jaw and the jaw is subject to these bisphosphonates, the remodeling is impaired. And you can get a real rampant degenerative disease of the jaw, which is there's no known treatment for it. It's horrendous. Your whole jaw collapses. So then there's Prolia, which is a strong medication that it works in a way to enhance bone by reducing inflammation, which is an interesting mechanism. Mm-hmm. But it does so in a way that's almost a little too strong. And I think that we can address that through natural methods. The supplement we use called Austera works like a weak version of Prolia. Prolia is something called a Rankl inhibitor. That's the, you know, the initial stand for some pathway of inflammation. And Austera, which contains hops, has some properties of being a Rankl inhibitor like Prolia. So we like to use that as a milder version, because inflammation is part of why you lose bone. There's an inflammatory component.
Yes. And osteoporosis is an inflammatory disease.
And then there's austenol. There's austenol as well, which is a nice, we use it for fracture healing. It's a bone morphogenetic protein, and it's used sometimes in, I mean, it comes to us from orthopedic surgery, but taken orally, it will somewhat enhance bone regeneration. So,
and this specifically, we're talking about osteoporosis. For Julie with osteopenia, she's taking already some vitamin D. I would urge her to get her vitamin D levels checked and make sure they're always over 50 or 55, for one thing.
At least 40.
But less than 100.
Yeah. But
yeah, at least 40.
No benefit with less than 40.
Right, right. And she's already, it seems to be she's on a very good diet with a lot of vegetables, particularly green ones, fruits, nuts, fish, poultry, some red meat. She's doing weight training. She's in good shape for her height at 5'8", 140 is just fine. She's taking some CoQ10 and probiotics and fish oil and magnesium. The cases I just want to bring up that we've seen here in women with osteoporosis where we have been able to actually reverse it, all included, first of all, some strontium. And again, we're talking about osteoporosis, not what Julie has, which is just merely osteopenia. But strontium, vitamin K, Austera, as you just mentioned, Dr. Hoffman, vitamin D, magnesium, and we also check for DHEA levels.
Yes, because that if there's no contraindication because of a history of breast cancer or some hormonally
or some
related
other
cancer, then DHEA is a real bone builder that we want to use. Mm-hmm. So one other thing I want to add is, we're running a little short on time in part one, so I'm going to keep you in suspense. I got another treatment that I think is really going to
be important. Oh, my gosh. Is this part one already?
This is part one.
Okay. Time flies when you're having fun.
Okay. So, and hopefully our audience is having as much fun as we are. So we'll return with yet another tip for addressing the problem of osteopenia. And it's wholesome, natural, and preventive. When we return, I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Hoffman Center nutritionist Layla Mudin. And this is our weekly Q&A with Layla for our Intelligent Medicine podcast series. Please join us for part two when we return.